is a fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
A rocket ship flies through outer space.
The time is the day after tomorrow. The place, a far corner of the universe. The cast of characters, three men lost amongst the stars. Three men sharing the common urgency of all men lost. They're looking for home. And in a moment, they'll find home. Not a home that is a place to be seen, but a strange, unexplainable experience to be felt.
The spacecraft decelerates toward a landing.
We're hitting atmosphere.
Keep your fingers crossed, Pete.
This may be it.
It better be. We're about out of fuel.
The three astronauts sit down in brace positions for the landing. They get up. Pete consults the control panel.
20.95 parts oxygen, 78.09 nitrogen. Well, I don't get it. That's air.
Gravity. Unit one.
It's incredible. Conditions identical to Earth, and yet we're 655 million miles away from Earth.
Pete starts for the exit.
Wait a minute, Pete. These instruments could be wrong.
What's the difference? We're not going anywhere now.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Pete slides open a door, revealing a view of a forest. A ladder automatically flips over out onto the ground. They look out at the surrounding terrain.
How far did you say we were from Earth?
655 million miles.
A small tractor and a pile of hay stand in front of a wooden barn. A white dog sniffs at a hand-pumped well. The three astronauts get out of the spaceship.
We're back on Earth!
No.
No? Well, what do you call that, a Martian?
Here, boy, come on.
The dog stands motionless.
Well, anyway, look at those trees. It's got to be Earth.
Well, what do you call that?
Walking towards the tractor.
Myers comes over.
It's called a tractor. They were in use on Earth during the 20th century, before the Total War.
You mean, we're on Earth 200 years ago?
It's an interesting theory, Pete, and as possible as any other, except that to my knowledge, Earth has never had more than one sun.
Whereas their sky has two.
All right, you explain it.
The only thing I'm certain of is that we're not on Earth.
We're not alone.
They walk past the pile of hay, behind which stands a farmer in overalls and a straw hat.
Excuse me, sir.
He approaches the farmer from behind and continues around to face him.
My name is Weber. We hate to bother you.
The farmer stands motionless, even as Myers waves his hand back and forth in front of the farmer's face.
What's the matter with him?
Seems to be in some sort of a trance, or...
Let's get out of here.
They cross a large stone bridge over a river.
Hey, look! There's somebody! Hey, mister! Mister!
A fisherman down on the riverbank.
How they biting? Mister?
The fisherman, also motionless.
Hey, wake up!
Tapping the fisherman and knocking him over.
The fisherman, now on his back, still motionless.
You hear that? The music, a band! Do you hear it? There's somebody here!
It seems to be coming from over there.
They continue across the bridge.
At the town square, a marching band plays while standing, motionless.
The astronauts approach the band, walking between two rows of musicians.
The music's coming from that loudspeaker, being piped in from somewhere.
Look!
Overhead, a banner reads, "Inauguration Ceremony. Welcome, Mayor Finch."
Concert's over.
Past the band, a crowd stands in the lobby of the town hall, many carrying American flags or signs such as, "We like Finch, our new mayor."
On a balcony, a man stands facing the crowd, smiling and holding his hat in his hand in front of him. The astronauts stare up at him.
Well, any ideas, Professor?
Well, I suppose it could be some sort of illusion.
Yes. Maybe we're being made to see and hear what we hope to find. The sights and sounds of home. No. No, that's all wrong. This is more than 200 years ahead of our time.
Or it could be that time itself is suspended here. Well, time may have, in a sense, have speeded up for us or slowed down for them.
You mean they might actually be moving?
It's possible.
Then why can't we see it?
Well, you don't see the movements of a clock's hands. Nevertheless, they do move.
Pete walks over to a grandfather clock below the balcony.
Well, this clock has no hands. Carl, do you really believe what you're saying?
No, of course not.
But they're not just statues. They're flesh and blood. Or something that feels like flesh and blood. There's somebody real has got to be here.
Now I say separate and meet back here in 1 hour.
Well, it's better than huddling together like frightened children.
Remember, we meet back here in 1 hour.
Weber walks down a sidewalk and stops to look in the window at a hotel. He goes in. A waitress stands holding a tray of bottles. A man stands at the reception desk facing the clerk. Four men sit at a table playing cards. Weber walks around the table. One of the card players, sitting behind a pile of cash and huge stacks of coins, is holding four aces and a joker. Myers goes into an apartment building called the Royal Crest.
He walks down the hall.
Hello? Anybody there?
He goes into the apartment.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Three violinists stand, their bows motionless, behind an elegant dinner table with unlit candles. A couple, frozen in dance, hold stemmed glasses. Meanwhile, Pete visits an exhibition hall where a beauty pageant is in progress. The audience sits on folding chairs facing a stage. Pete walks up onto the stage. Looks at each in a row of contestants wearing sashes labeled for various counties and as motionless as everyone else. Pete snaps his fingers in front of one of the contestants. In front, a woman wearing glasses and a tiara holds a scepter and bears a sash declaring her the beauty queen.
Your Majesty, I don't blame the judges. You're the prettiest of them all. But tell me something, Your Majesty. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with everybody in this crazy place?
Addressing the audience.
Answer me. Can't you talk? Can't you move? Answer me!
He jumps off the stage and runs out of the room. In the front row, a white-haired man turns his head and smiles. The three astronauts walk down a suburban residential street, where a man pushes a lawnmower.
This is the way it was on Earth, not so very long ago. My great-grandfather showed me pictures of it. Quiet and peaceful.
A man stands at the back of an ice truck.
You mean you like it here?
I would if it were real. If I could be sure it wasn't all going to vanish in a puff of pink smoke.
Pete walks up to a man on the sidewalk who is pushing an ice cream cart.
Well, as for me, it's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live here.
Like it or not, this is home from now on.
They walk up to a stately three-story house.
Charming. Lovely, isn't it?
If you want it, it's yours.
Yes, that's true, isn't it?
They walk along a hedge-lined path leading towards the house.
On the front porch, a man sits in a rocking chair reading a newspaper.
You don't mind if we have a little look around, do you, sir?
The man lowers the paper.
Not at all.
The three astronauts stare at him.
You're most welcome. My name's McGuire, Jeremy McGuire.
He is the same man from the front row at the beauty pageant.
Oh, come, gentlemen, there's nothing to be afraid of. Truly, there isn't.
But you're real.
Well, of course I am. Isn't everybody?
I used to think so.
Oh, you mean... Do come inside. Come on, won't you? Come on, come inside. There's nothing to be afraid of, I assure you.
They enter a lavishly furnished entrance hall.
Huh? Do you like it? We built it for a Mr. Jenkinson. But at the last moment, he decided that the one thing he wanted to be was a knight in armor. So he's out there in the medieval section, slaying a dragon.
You mean there are other sections?
They proceed into the living room.
Oh, yes, of course. We have many sections. There's the Roman, the Egyptian, the Wild Western, but this is the most popular because it represents a period in American culture when creature comforts were most abundant and before peace on Earth became impossible.
Now look, Mr.
Wickwire.
Wickwire. We are from Earth.
Oh?
We were on a routine geological mission. We ran into a meteorite storm. Some of our equipment was knocked out. We got lost. Now, that was 6 months ago. We saw this asteroid and we landed. Our fuel is gone. We've got to stay here.
I see. I see, then you're not from the Glades.
The what?
But you are from the Earth. Tell me, did they ever have that atomic war?
Yes, in 1985. Most of the Earth's surface was destroyed, and it's taken us 200 years to pick up the pieces.
Oh, how sad.
Mr. Wickwire, now you've got to explain some things to us before we go out of our minds.
Certainly, but you look hungry. Let me fix you a little lunch first, then we'll talk.
Wait a second. Now you tell us one thing right now. Where are we?
Why, you're in a cemetery.
Smiling.
Didn't you know? Please make yourselves comfortable. I'll be back in a few moments.
Closing a door behind him.
Cemetery?
Wickwire returns carrying a tray of glasses.
Coffee will be served in a few minutes, gentlemen. May I propose a toast?
Myers picks up glasses and hands them to the others.
To peace, my friends. To everlasting, eternal peace.
Wickwire sips from his glass. Myers raises his glass and drinks up. The others follow suit.
Excellent. Lipra milk, isn't it?
Yes.
Mr.
Wickwire.
We're very confused. We need help.
Well, sit down, my boy. Sit down. Come on, sit down. What is it?
Now, you said that we were in a cemetery. What did you mean?
Just exactly that. But before I explain, you must give me some information. If you were granted your dearest wish, what would your wish be?
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
I mean, where would you rather be, right now?
I'd like to be on the ship headed for home.
And you, Captain?
I'll go along with that.
Myers also nods his head.
Splendid. Just one thing more. When you left Earth, what was the date?
September.
No, the year.
2185.
2185? Now I understand.
Well, that's nice. We don't.
You see, when you arrived here, I thought you were the men from Happy Glades. But by your behavior, of course, I could see you couldn't be.
We're still not following you. What's Happy Glades?
The world's greatest mortuary. At least, that's what it used to be. You see, the management hit upon this scheme as a service to those who could afford it.
The scheme being?
This little asteroid. Where we would recreate the exact conditions under which the dear departed could be most happy. For an example, if the deceased always wanted to be elected mayor, he would achieve his ambition here, for all eternity.
You mean those people are all dead?
No. Not all of them, just a select few. The others are imitations.
In other words, this is the place where your dreams come true. After you've stopped dreaming.
Yes, that might be one way of putting it. Yes, that's very good.
You expect us to believe that explanation?
Wickwire's smile drops.
I hadn't thought of that. Don't you? It's true, you know.
Well, I'll admit we haven't come up with anything better.
Standing up.
But a cemetery out in space.
Turning towards Wickwire.
Millions of miles from Earth.
Approaching him.
Why?
Why?
Yes, why? Now, your boss could have bought a piece of desert.
Oh, no, you don't understand at all. Happy Glades promises eternal peace, everlasting peace. You couldn't have that on Earth. Now, could you?
He has a point.
What about you?
Me?
Yes, you. How do you figure in all this?
Why, I'm the caretaker. It's my job to make sure that our guests are not disturbed.
Well, when did this mortuary, or whatever it is, begin?
1973, I believe. Yes.
That'd make you a bit on the elderly side, wouldn't it, Mr. Wire Wick?
Wick Wire. Now I'm afraid you're forcing me into a rather embarrassing admission. You see, I'm not actually human. Oh, I am now, but when you've gone, I shall go back to sleep again until I'm needed. You see, I'm merely a scientific device. I go on and off again, like a machine. You understand?
Sitting down?
Oh, yes. It's not very complicated, is it, really? He goes on and off.
Yes. I think I must have been off for about 200 years.
Pete gets up.
Now, look, mister, you think...
All right, Pete.
Weber holds him back.
Mr. Wickwire, we're staying here.
Yes, I know.
Yes, but you said something about our being gone.
Oh, that's a figure of speech, Captain. I meant departed. Gone on, as it were.
Well, you know what he's saying, don't you?
I told you not to trust him! I told you!
Hurling his glass, then falling to the floor, Myers goes over to Pete, then kneels beside him.
We meant you no harm. I realize that.
Standing up.
And I'm sorry. Truly I am.
The antidote. Give us the antidote.
There is no antidote, Captain. Even now the eternifying fluid is coursing through your veins. But it won't be painful, I assure you.
But why? Why us?
Wickwire, with a stern face.
Because you are here, and you are men. And while there are men, there can be no peace.
Shaking his head. Later, Wickwire, in the spaceship, with a feather duster, brushes off Weber, then Pete. And Myers.
Kirby, Weber, and Myers. Three men lost. They shared a common wish. A simple one, really. They wanted to be aboard their ship headed for home.
Wickwire, back in his house, lays down his feather duster.
And fate, a laughing fate. A practical jokester with a smile that stretched across the stars saw to it that they got their wish. With just one reservation. The wish came true, but only in the Twilight Zone.
Credits. Directed by Douglas Hayes. Written by Charles Beaumont. Produced by Buck Houghton. Executive producer for Cayuga Productions, Rod Serling. Starring Cecil Kellaway, Jeff Morrow, and Don Dubbins, Kevin Hagen. Music by Van Cleve. Director of Photography, George T. Clemens. Production Manager, Ralph W. Nelson. Art Directors, George W. Davis, William Ferrari. Assistant Director, Edward Denault. Casting, Mildred Goose. Film Editor, Joseph Gluck. Set Decorations, Henry Grace, Bud S. Friend. Sound, Frank Milton, Gene Valentino. Animated Title by UPA. Copyright 1959 by Cayuga Productions, Inc. Filmed at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. Audio Description by Lou Lasher.